I am one of your hosts for today. My name is Steve Smith. My co-host is Ken Rubin. He's sitting right across from me in the studio today. Folks, this week we're going to be talking about a topic that inherently may sound really boring to some of you, but it's a huge area for most businesses to have to deal with because it is the lifeblood of keeping a business going, and that's the financing part. You know, we all know what the last 5 years looked like in terms of the general overall economy, the tightening of the monetary fund, and the availability of financing. And of course, when it dribbles down to the small business level, what it means is that businesses that used to be able to operate with good cash flows and access to money for, you know, things like capital improvement or just paying, you know, for payroll, you know, if their income or their revenues come in kind of a choppy fashion, they could fix the problem fairly easily. That's all changed. And so today, a lot of businesses struggle with just being able to find out where they can get financing and how easy is it, how affordable is it, does it suit their particular circumstances. And if you don't have that locked down, you're in a constant struggle of being able to get the money and collect the money before you can use the money.
Well, also, there's a lot of businesses out there today that are non-standard.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I'm talking about a standard company, to me, would be like a brick-and-mortar, a retail shop, something where you could go into the bank and explain it to someone who's not in your industry, and they go, oh, yeah, right, okay, I get that. You know, there's a lot of Internet-based companies now, different kinds of things. I mean, if your entire business is social media-based, that's very difficult for a bank or a lending organization to understand and be willing to participate in.
Oh, not only that, but you have a huge growing popularity of service-based companies. You know, people providing all types of either professional services or technical services or things that don't require a whole lot of capital investment or facility or things of that nature.
Equipment.
Yeah, equipment. So when you start getting into more and more of those types of businesses, because, you know, one person can operate them and, you know, you can be flexible with them and things of that nature, that's even harder for the more traditional lending institutions to get their arms around.
Right. No, exactly. A great show to talk about this because these kinds of businesses are wondering on a regular basis how to get that funding that they need.
Yes. And we have a guest on today, and when we get to the point where we're going to bring him on and introduce him, what you're going to learn really quickly is that there are other methods of financing that a lot of people still don't know about, but once you figure these out, once you get introduced to them and you understand how they work, they can actually be great solutions for certain types of businesses. So that's what we're going to learn about today.
Right, agreed. So to be a big shot, if you want to be a small biz big shot.
That's right. I mean, if you're going to be in the big shot club.
You got to have a tool belt.
Yes.
And you got to know what each tool does.
Yes.
And you got to know what your options are.
Yes.
And I've always said, if you want to do the job right, you just need the right tool.
Right.
Well, and you need to know how to use that tool.
That's true.
So that's the value here.
All right. So today we're going to be talking with a gentleman that I've personally known for about 5 years now, and he does an outstanding job in the field that he's involved in. This guy's name is Adam Lomax, and the company he is with is called Oxygen Funding. And Adam actually works with another gentleman named, and I'm sure he'll tell us who this fellow is once we get him on here, Mr. D'Ambrosio, who those guys together formed Oxygen Funding, which is an asset-based lending company that provides cash flow solutions to small and mid-sized banks nationwide, or businesses nationwide. He's the executive vice president and CEO, or COO, and he oversees underwriting, customer service, operations, referrals, affiliate marketing, and local business development. So he's basically out there finding the people who need the cash flow solutions that they provide and kind of helping them figure out how it's going to work for them and taking care of them and bringing them in. So I always like talking to people who have their hands on the wheels of the business, because they're in the best position to be able to explain exactly what it is and how it works. So, Adam, welcome to the Small Biz Big Shot Show today. We're very happy to have you on. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Hey, can I piggyback on one thing you were discussing earlier before we get into anything new?
Sure.
Because you were talking about the types of businesses being a little bit different today. And there's one more aspect to that conversation that is really quite impactful when it comes to the traditional financing folks like bankers and such. Yeah, a lot of businesses today are able to get started and grow very, very fast. Many times people describe that growth as explosive. And you see it a lot in like social media markets. You'll see it in internet-based markets where cost of entry is low, but the ability to grow fast is very, very prevalent.
Yes.
And fast growth is something that traditional finance still has a hard time getting their head around. They fear that it's something that's a mirage or something that's temporary or something that's not going to be able to pay back the loan down the line because they're not going to be there. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
And so that tends to really rattle the cage of any of the traditional finance folks when they see a situation where someone legitimately has very quick, fast growth ahead of them, and they don't know how to deal with that in many cases.
Well, I know a lot of times when the bank will underwrite, they'll say, oh, minimum of 2 years in business or minimum of 4 years in business. And I never really got why. I get that they want to have some sort of track record to review and hopefully see that steady growth. But, you know, like you said, if your business is in a rapid growth period or is just one of those rapid growth companies that will sustain that, you know, there should be exceptions to these rules is, I guess, what I'm trying to get at.
And the way that typically traditional finance looks at that scenario, though, is a backward-looking approach. It is saying, it is a methodology that says, okay, they've been able to do this in year one, in year two, year three. I think that means they can do this in year four.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And because of that methodology, it's really hard to take on face value projections for, you know, 3 year projections or, you know, carry this growth rate we've had for 6 months out another 6 months. Those kinds of conversations are very hard to fit into that methodology.
All right, well, listen, let's kick this interview off, and why don't you tell us, so we all have a reference point, tell us a little bit about what Oxygen Funding is, what it does, and then we'll kind of launch into some other aspects of this whole, you know, small and medium-sized business financing.
Okay, and what I'll say is we fit into a small piece of the alternative finance world,
okay.
And I want to make that point because it's very diverse. It's very large. There are thousands and thousands of providers worldwide, and certainly within the United States, that provide all different kinds of commercial finance products. And because of that, if you are a business looking for financing, there's no way in the world you're going to know all of them. You're not going to know all the things that are potentially available and might apply to you. In our business, we are in the world of factoring, is the term it's used.
Okay.
And it's basically financing sales, directly financing sales. Think of it, and the best analogy I can give is if everybody uses a credit card pretty much when they go to a vendor, you know, whether it be a restaurant or whatever, that vendor has made a decision to take that credit card and give away whatever, 2.5, 3 points, whatever on that sale, in order to get paid virtually immediately.
Hmm.
That's the decision that vendor has made. And they'll do that all day long. And the reason they'll do that all day long is that it means more business.
Gotcha.
Yeah, what we do is very similar to that for commercial transactions where there's not a credit card availability, where invoices are being rendered.
Right.
We turn those invoices into cash for our customers as they're being rendered for a fee, just like a merchant does with a credit card.
So you actually aid in the business owner's ability to maintain some kind of viable cash flow on an ongoing basis.
What often happens is because we are stabilizing cash flow, because our clients are able to submit invoices whenever they want. There's no requirement that they do this. They do it when they need it.
Right.
And consequently, when they have the peaks and valleys in their sales, which most companies do, when they hit those situations, they choose to use us. That stabilizes cash. And if they know they've always got that, if they've got that option in their hip pocket, now they don't need to worry about the cash. They're not juggling the cash anymore, and they can focus completely on business development efforts. And it can make a huge difference.
All right. So tell us a little bit about, you know, from your experience, from your vantage point, what are the most common challenges that businesses have when it comes to securing financing?
I would say the number one thing that I see is business owners, for good reasons, not wanting to jump into the fray, wait too long. So they've got something good happening in their business, sales are going well, that they're looking to hire, they're looking to do a lot of things, and at the very last second, okay, I need to go get money now.
Mm.
And that really is tough. Almost any financing organization is going to really have a hard time with someone who comes to them and say, I need X number of dollars tomorrow. That's a hard conversation. It's far, far better for business owners to start looking for the money that they know they're going to need sooner than later.
So how does it work? Let's say a company, you know, has what's called $50,000 outstanding invoices, and they'd rather have that money up front come faster than to wait for the invoices and the checks to come back in the mail. How do you guys get involved and get in into the process? Because I imagine you're injecting yourself into this process at some point.
Well, our position has always been, with Oxygen Funding, is we're here to make our client-customer relationships stronger. Because the way we look at it, the stronger those relationships are, the more invoices there are, the more opportunity there is for us to help. So, yes, we do inject ourselves, but it's in a way that's done in a very professional, courteous way. And we have developed great rapport with a lot of our clients' customers over the years because of that. The way we actually do the process is fairly simple. Most of my clients will submit their invoices like they do now to their customers, and they'll CC Oxygen Funding. So we'll get a copy. We then verify that invoice. It's usually an email with their customer that says, did you get it? Is it all okay? Once we have that, we then purchase that invoice and then provide the majority of that invoice value that day to our client. So our client oftentimes is getting the most of the value of their invoices within a day or two of the time sending to their customer. They now have that money to use for whatever purpose they need.
What's your experience on how long it takes people to pay invoices? I have clients today that get in and out of the struggle of trying to collect on invoices that have now passed the 60-day mark. They're getting close to 90 days. What's your frame of reference in terms of that kind of issue for businesses? Their customers taking too long to pay these invoices?
It's actually a two or three issue question. Number one, if we think back maybe 10 years ago, there was much more of a willingness to pay within terms by customers just normally. What has changed in the last 6-7 years is customers are saying to their people, we want to hold on to this money as long as we can. So if you're a little business and you're working with, let's say, a big company, I don't know, Walmart, Disney, some big company, where it is generally taking longer to pay, and some of that is a conscious decision of payers to hold the money longer. Some of that is. Now, the second thing that I see often is a lot of the business owners that I work with have not invested a lot of time and energy and staffing in actual collection procedures. So, you know, they'll send an invoice. They may or may not follow up on that invoice quickly or ever. And then eventually they do get paid, but it takes a lot longer because things may get in the way. In the process of doing what we do, follow-up activities are happening. And not very, very frequently, my clients start to see quicker pay cycles as a result of using our service.
So from what I'm hearing is that when an invoice is sent to the customer, your company is involved in the process of communicating with that customer on a periodic basis to make sure that the invoice actually gets paid in a timely manner. Am I hearing that right?
Periodic might be a little common, but yes, we verify that invoice has been received up front. And we also start checking in with that customer after it's gone beyond the time where it should have been paid. So if it's on a net 30, on day 35, 36, a friendly email is going to the customer saying, hey, we haven't received this yet. Can you just give us an update? What that does is that since they know someone's following up on the invoice, now they're not going to hold that as long as they would have otherwise.
Okay. So it's like out of sight, out of mind, but with the reminders in there, it becomes more top of mind, and clients are encouraged to pay within terms or pay in a reasonable period of time.
Absolutely.
All right, tell us this, because one of the things we always like to do with these shows is kind of paint pictures for the listeners to give them an idea of what typically can be going on in advance of services like yours where they could say, gee, that's happening to me now. I need to look at Oxygen Funding to help me out with this problem. So can you give us an idea of what goes on a day-to-day basis in a business before your service appears to help them out?
It is best if my future clients, have a pretty good handle as to what their growth prospects realistically are. Because if it's just, if it's incremental growth, if it's 2% growth, 3% growth, then 95% of the time, a bank is probably the best answer for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But if they have other types of growth prospects, if they've got 10 points or 15 points of regular consistent growth ahead of them, a loan is going to be a tough situation for them because they're going to outrun that loan, and it won't take long.
Mm.
So that's when those kinds of situations come up, that's when a service like mine, which is directly key to sales, it does not matter to me whether they sell $100,000 this month or, you know, $500,000 this month. I work with both, you know. So that means I can keep up. And it, you know, what you don't want to have is you don't want to box yourself in as a business owner. You don't want to say, okay, I'm going to go out and get as much as I can. The bank offers you $80,000, you take $80,000. And now you're stuck with only being able to grow at the rate of $80,000 of financing for the next 3 years.
Mm.
Right. So you're not locked in. Okay, so my next question is, if a company signs up with you, do you require all of their invoices to go through you, or can then they kind of cherry pick?
In my service, we make it as completely as flexible as possible. We want our clients to stay as much in control as possible. And what that means is that there is no cost in or out. There is no term either. It is a month-to-month relationship. There is no minimum requirement, and there's no requirement to factor any particular invoice. So I have clients who are seasonal. I have clients where they use us, you know, a few times a quarter, and I have clients that use me every week. It fits all those scenarios. During the times when they're not using us, there is no cost. There's no cost at all to them.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, it sounds like this is a great solution in some cases where maybe you might be doing business with a customer that you know is, you know, tends to lag on their payments. They get into the 45, 60-day mark on a recurring basis. And if you know that, it sounds like you're a great tool to put in place to, you know, kind of keep that customer on board and moving a little faster.
Well, what you don't want to be is be a bank. So for your customers to continue to force these interest-free loans on you, where you're letting them use your money for a period of time and you have no choice in the matter,
mm-hmm.
that can dry up your ability to do other work. And that's the situation that we solve.
Right. Okay, so tell us how you work from the day that, you know, I have a business and I have a lot of reoccurring business with clients and the client base is growing. And I've got a lot of my money out in receivables, and I call you up and say, hey, I need help with my cash flow. I need help, you know, recouping this because we're growing and you know, and we don't really want to be at the behest of the local bank here. How do you start that whole process? What's the steps involved?
Our evaluations normally take about 7 business days. Our application is one side of one piece of paper, so it's a simple process. And during that time, what we're looking at is your history with your customers, getting a sense as to what is the payment patterns you have now. And we're going to look for the best candidates in your pool of customers for factoring. You get to choose which ones we would move forward with if we approve you. And normally we would advise you to look at the better paying customers first, because our fees are always time-based. So if you work with customers that are paying faster, you have lower fees.
Hmm.
So if you have an option, I would always say look at your quicker paying customers first and use that money to make up for whatever slower payer customers you have.
So the business goes through a simple application process. You review it. You come back to them after looking at the history of payments and the customers they have and kind of invoicing track record, and you help them make a selection in terms of who would be the best candidates. But ultimately, it's the owner's decision as to what invoices they send you and how frequently they send them to you. They just know up front that depending on the type of invoice and what the pay history typically ends up being, that could alter the cost of doing business with you.
Exactly correct.
Okay. All right, so tell us a little bit about you. Because this is a very interesting business. It's not one that I know a lot of people that are involved in this kind of work. What encouraged you to get into this type of business?
I've been asked that question a lot. And you probably saw in my bio, I spent a lot of years in the property casualty insurance industry. And I tell everyone that basically I learned everything I was learned there. And I tell everyone that it's really very similar to what I used to do there. Because with the clients I'm working with and the clients that we're evaluating for service, we're always looking at what is the risk and how can we mitigate the risk and how can we price the risk, which is what insurance is all about. The only difference being insurance is after the fact. now I'm in front. Now I'm at the point where I'm providing cash for work to be done. So it's just a different placement. I love working with the folks I work with. There's a bunch of very energetic, very enthusiastic people. I've run across so many ideas that I don't think I ever could have come up with for a business that I find fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
It's a collection of people who are succeeding, and it's a great group of people to work with. That's what I love most about the business.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your journey in building your own business, because, you know, as much as we like to provide insights and tips and ideas and resources to people listening to these shows, I'm also interested in the people we have on the show kind of finding out about their own journey. So give us an idea as you got into this and, you know, you built it up to where it is today. What kind of challenges, what kind of things did you run into that you had to deal with in order to be here?
Good question, actually. Don D'Ambrosio, who you mentioned earlier, he's our president, my business partner. We met back in my insurance years a long time ago, and our families became good friends way back when. And he went his way into the mortgage world, I stayed in insurance, and then come around circle 20-some-odd years later, we got together to put a company together, and ultimately that became Oxygen Funding. He has a very strong financial accounting background, so he understood factoring, he understood asset-based lending, and he felt there was a great opportunity. Now, we happened to open up our business right at the start of the credit crunch. So, you know, some people say that was a great timing. It certainly was an unusual timing
mm-hmm.
for the business. We opened it with our own money. Fortunately, we had saved up enough over the years between us that we could start the business. So that helped a lot. But then we both came from the corporate world, highly corporate world, so we knew a lot of how to run things. I was always in the IT ops area, and he's in the accounting areas and the CFO positions and such. So we had a lot of the pieces we needed to actually get off the ground. But as all businesses, as in any business, your own money can only take you so far.
Yes.
You'll eventually succeed to the point where you need more. And so when that happened, we were very fortunate that we knew some private investors that knew other private investors, and we've put together a nice crop of people who are with us now who have given us money to conduct the business.
Okay, so can you share with us any particular incidents or situation that you got in along the way that really kind of really challenged you to be able to stay on course and to persevere and kind of punch through it?
Bond came from the CFO side. I came from the ops side. The number one thing that we did, neither of us had a lot of strength in, was marketing. And so we knew that. When we put the business plan together, we knew we were actually contemplating having a third person on the original team to fill that spot. And that has proven to be a continual, I don't know if the word, at times it's a challenge. You know, it definitely is, because it's not either of us were brought up in that area.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I would say that definitely mm-hmm. is it. And it has taken its course. It's twists and turns throughout our 7 years.
Well, if this is any consolation, you are in a long line.
Right.
Because that is the two things that I've experienced and that I've run into in all the years I've been doing what I do now, is that that most businesses, unless they come out of these disciplines, are extraordinarily challenged with these. One is understanding how marketing works and how to apply it in your particular business. And the other one is the management aspect, how to run the business, you know, how to make it profitable, how to keep it from controlling your life, and how to expand it, how to get it to a point where, you know, it's doing more than what you can do in a 24-hour day. And so, yeah, that doesn't surprise me, but I think it's interesting when you look at your background and your partner's background and you realize that, you know, neither one of you had that essential element, but yet you figured out a way to get through it.
So I think that's true in any business. I think it's rare that any business starts with everything it will ever need.
Yes.
And I think a hallmark of any successful business is the ability to adapt and move forward, you know, always keep moving forward. So in our case, the marketing was the one piece that we probably spend the most time on.
Well, speaking of that, Adam, why don't you tell us who your demographic is? When you look for customers, you know, who do you look for? What does that customer look like? and you know, what's your general market? I know you touch a lot of different businesses and a lot of different types, but who do you look for in general?
Well, first let me say we are U.S., anywhere in the U.S., so we have clients all over the country. We are equally happy with clients that provide a service as well as clients who make a product. So either one can work for us and do work for us. And there's really two broad areas of prospects that come to me. Number one is what we've already talked about, clients who are growing very, very quickly, looking to not have to turn away new customers and finding the financing to do that. But there's another group, sometimes they come from our referral partners, where there's some kind of a blemish. You know, something has happened. Sometimes it's an overdue tax or something has happened, which kind of rattles the cage of a traditional finance situation. You know, if you're a banker and your client now has a tax lien, that can be a challenge. So sometimes we'll get those referrals to help those customers so that the bank doesn't lose those customers or sometimes they come to us directly, not even through a bank, because we can work with a lot of those kinds of challenges. Sometimes the personal credit is the challenge, where a business is growing, but the owner had a foreclosure 2 years ago or something like that. That does not affect our ability to approve the account, but it can affect the ability of other folks when they're looking at that same situation.
All right. Well, here, this brings up a question now. When you're working with a company, one of the things I know companies and business owners and just people in general are kind of always sitting in the back of their mind is, you know, am I in a good credit-worthy position? Do I have a good credit score? You know, am I looked at as being, you know, responsible with my finances and things like that? Because that really determines how easy and how much you can get the next time around. When you guys are working with a business, is there any upside in their credit-worthiness in the eyes of the more conventional market? And in on the other side of the coin, is there any downside? Is working with you kind of a sign that they're in trouble in other areas and they may not be credit worthy?
In my experience, when my client goes to bid a job with somebody, let's just pick somebody at Yahoo, let's say, Yahoo is looking at the ability of their vendors to perform. And one of the critical things they want to see is their vendors have adequate financing. So if you've got financing, it doesn't matter where it came from, if you've got adequate financing, they're going to look at you better than when they're evaluating your bid. So what we find is that our clients do very well because they've got the adequate financing that perhaps their competitors do not.
No, I was going to add that, you know, as a small business grows, creditworthiness and, you know, letters from banks and things like that and from companies like yours, alternate financing, become more and more important, you know, as you expand. So, I mean, that could be a critical piece, especially when you get a bid from a big company like you said, Yahoo is the example here.
The other thing is that the way we look at an account is very, very different than the banker, for instance. Most of our decision when we look at a prospect is based upon their customers, because at the end of the day, their customers will be the ones paying.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell people if 85% of the credit decision is based on your customers and 15% is based on you. And that 15% is pretty small, because unless we're seeing real serious issues, that 15% is not going to derail an evaluation. So it's really the customers that are the bulk of them.
So when you're saying creditworthiness of the customer, are you pulling a D&B on the customer that the invoice has gone out to? How does that work?
Yeah, we don't use D&B, but we do use third-party credit. We also take a look at your arrangement with your customer, whatever contracts, agreements, POs, whatever are in place, so we have a good feeling as to what that relationship is. But, yeah, if the credit for the customer is pretty good and they're paying on a pretty consistent, you know, whether it be 30 days, 40 days, whatever it is, and that pretty much jives with what you have, what they're paying you, everything's the same, so we know what to expect.
Mm. All right, so every service has a cost to it. And yep. What I'd like to know now is to the best of your ability, can you give us some idea as to the cost or the range of costs or, you know, what does it cost a business to utilize your service for the benefits we've already talked about?
Before I give you a number, I want to highlight a couple things, and that is, number one, my clients have the ability to submit an invoice at any point in time for funding.
Sure.
So I'll give you an example. Let's say they issue an invoice on January 1st. They don't need the money until January 25th. They send me the invoice on January 1st. We verify it. We're ready to go. We fund on January 25th. They pay on February 20th. Now that's only out 25 days. So that means that my clients have the ability to control how long the invoices are out. Fees are based on how long our money is out. And that's a very important distinction because that means my clients can always control how much they're going to spend for the finance.
Okay.
See that? That's a pretty important piece. Most of my clients are somewhere between 2% and 4.5%. That's why I used the credit card analogy earlier, because remember, with credit cards, you're usually giving up 2.5%, maybe 3.5%.
Well, if you're taking American Express, you're giving up more than that.
So it's right in that range. But it is time-based. So if we're going to work with a customer that pays in 30 days, it's going to be somewhere 2 to 4.5. If they pay in 90 days, it's going to be more. So,
well, I mean, that's certainly encouraging because, I don't know the depths of the factoring industry, but my perception has always been because you're an alternative source of funding that there was more of a premium associated with the cost of doing business this way than a more conventional way. Based on what you're describing, it doesn't sound like that. If there's a premium at all, that it's that big.
Well, and then a lot of that is because we're pretty much unregulated, so all my competitors can pretty much do what they want. A lot of my competitors bring people in on minimums, and they say you've got to do X amount of volume every month. If you don't, you still have to pay me fees. You know, all of those kinds of things can make it a pretty expensive proposition.
All right, so. So it sounds like you guys have figured out a way to provide the business owner with the cash flow that they need when they need it, where it's flexible enough that they can access you or not, and it's all customer driven. You know, it's not like you guys put them on a scheduled plan and then they've got to kind of march to your drum. Once you've verified them, once they understand exactly what you're there for, they can use you as frequently, as infrequently as they desire. Is that right?
Absolutely correct. And during the times they don't use us, there's no cost.
Cool.
It even sounds like you can regulate your costs of, well, a company's cost of using your service by timing when you need the cash flow. So if you don't need it right away, but you want to have it available by a certain date, that can definitely cut down your cost in your service fees.
Exactly right.
Yeah, I really like that aspect of it. That that makes a lot of sense because if you know when certain payments are due and you need the cash at that point, then there's no sense in sitting on it for 2 weeks and incurring charges if it's not ready to be paid until a particular date.
Well, especially if you look at what people are doing in lieu of us. I can't tell you how many customers come to me when they're fed up with borrowing from the IRS. Now, that may sound silly, but if you don't pay your taxes, you're borrowing from the IRS.
Yeah, definitely.
Either 941s, whatever it is. That's a very expensive way to operate your business.
Yes.
And also dangerous. or other things. There's other mechanisms people use to deal with not having financing. And they're all more expensive than 2 to 4.5%.
Okay, Adam, listen, we're getting down to the end of our show here. We really appreciate you being on here. Why don't you tell the folks that are listening how best to contact you if they have interest in your service?
Well, our website is www.oxygenfunding.com. And our number, if you want to call us, 800-790-3419.
Great. Adam, listen, very nice having you on today. We really appreciate your insight and bringing forth this alternative funding source because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that would be interested in knowing more about it. So appreciate you being on the show today. Have a great one. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Bye. Appreciate
you. Take care.
Adam.